This is Jim Inkster and a special guest to Talk Louisiana, an encore appearance for Steve Inskeep. He is the host of Morning Edition, has been since 2004, and he's also become a prolific writer and quite a historian. And he goes back to the year of 1856 and the presidential election of that year, in which James Buchanan, a Democrat, defeated John Fremont, a Republican. But Fremont's story is one that has great relevance to today, and he was one of the great explorers in American history. As you note, Steve, when he was 40 years old, people were already naming buildings in his honor. You can relate to that. As a young man at 35, you were named anchor of one of the great entities in broadcast journalism.
Well, they didn't put my name on the show, but thank you for the comparison. I'm honored.
Well, this gentleman is one who is not as well known as, say, as Abraham Lincoln, who was a contemporary of his. Fremont born in 1813, Lincoln in 1809, but he was a major factor in his time, wasn't he?
Yeah, and his story is connected to Abraham Lincoln's story. Most people know that Abraham Lincoln was the first Republican president elected in 1860 on an anti-slavery platform, an election that led to the Civil War. Not as many people know, though, that the first Republican presidential candidate was John Charles Fremont. Fremont ran in 1856, the first Republican presidential nominee, and he, in effect, pioneered the strategy that Lincoln used to win. So he, along with his wife Jessie, are a big part of the road to the American Civil War, in which they also participate.
The book is Imperfect Union, How Jesse and John Fremont Mapped the West, Invented Celebrity, and Helped Cause the Civil War. As you note, Fremont was the first Republican candidate for president in the year of 1856, preceding Abraham Lincoln 4 years later. And he was a Republican whose politics of today would probably not be the same as Republicans of today. The parties, as we know, have evolved over time. But what shaped his political viewpoint when he ran for president?
Fremont, first we should say, was someone who was very ambitious, and his primary qualification for the presidency, or for running for president, was that he was super famous. He had made himself extraordinarily famous. You correctly noted, Jim, that he was an explorer of the American West. As explorers go, he didn't discover all that much that was new in the 1840s and 50s. But he came back and, with the help of his wife, Jessie, wrote best-selling accounts of his adventures. And these inspired a lot of people to move to the American West. As part of the Great Westward Emigration, he also took part in the conquest of California as part of the war against Mexico in the 1840s. So he was extremely famous and extremely ambitious. And when the Republican Party was founded in the early to mid-1850s as an anti-slavery party, and you correctly note, nobody's politics then are anything like we would approve now. Even the anti-slavery party did not openly advocate the abolition of slavery. They just wanted to restrict the growth of it. When that party was founded, they wanted to find somebody who was considered heroic and famous and didn't have a very long political record that could be constantly attacked. And they came up with Fremont almost by acclamation. He seemed the perfect candidate. He was considered such an extraordinary hero. This is a guy who in 1850 was described by a magazine as one of the world's three most important historical figures since Jesus Christ. People really latched onto his story because he was all part of the westward expansion of the country. He seemed to be synonymous with the American story.
Well, when he ran for president in 1856, he wasn't even on the ballot in many southern states, including Louisiana. He carried 11 of the 31 states then, got over 1.3 million votes. James Buchanan, who was on the ballot in all but, well, I think every state except for South Carolina, there was no popular vote. He got 1.8 million votes. But obviously in the southern part of this country, Fremont, who was a Republican, his ideas were considered out of sync with the views that were prevailing at that time.
His ideas, or his party's ideas, really were considered extremist in the South. And this is one of the ways that the story is, to my mind, really relevant, Jim, is because in the 1840s and 50s, we have an opportunity to study a deeply divided nation. The divide then was over a vital issue, slavery, human slavery. Northern states had gradually abolished African slavery. Southern states had ever more deeply embraced it. And there was an increasing imbalance of power between the two sides, which made Southerners feel insecure and be ever more militant in defending what they saw as their rights to enslave people or to govern themselves as they wished, is the way that, that white Southerners would have put it, I suppose. Northerners felt ever more oppressed and offended by the efforts to expand slavery into parts of the American West. It was a deeply divided country, a polarized country. Each side had its own media. Each side had its own version of the truth. Each side had its own version of violent incidents in the 1856 election. It was a very destabilizing time.
The book, again, Imperfect Union, How Jesse and John Fremont Mapped the West and Bennett's Celebrity and Helped Cause the Civil War. Jesse was the daughter of a U.S. senator. She was deeply involved in the West, provided her husband with the entree to the highest levels of government and media, and his career reached new heights a few months after their elopement. He chose a good mate for his ultimate goals, did he not?
Well, yeah. It's hard to imagine that he would have been quite so famous or successful without Jesse Benton Fremont. He was a talented but penniless and unknown U.S. Army lieutenant when he fell in love with Jesse Benton Fremont, the daughter of a senator who in many ways is a more fascinating person of the two and also a very modern figure in my mind because she was a woman who wanted to do things that were off-limits to women at that time. She wanted to participate in politics. She wanted to participate in media. She wanted to be a writer. She wanted to do big things. She wanted to have an impact on the world. There were a lot of women, frankly, who were wives of influential men who were influential in Washington, D.C. That was quite common even in that relatively early time. But Jesse was different in the direct way that she participated in politics. She would sit in on some of the meetings of her powerful father, Senator Thomas Hart Benton of Missouri. She became the publicist and political agent for her husband. She would go and get letters that he wrote published in newspapers to publicize his exploits. She would go when he was off in the West somewhere and represent him to the President of the United States, a series of presidents, as a matter of fact, who she knew. And she would confidently argue with presidents, including James K. Polk and later on Abraham Lincoln himself.
Steve, you note that President Jefferson envisioned a Western empire, and the opening of the American West began in 1804 after the Louisiana Purchase of 1803, and there were John and Jesse Fremont.
Yeah, this was the next step, or one of the next steps, after the Lewis and Clark expedition of the very early 1800s. They had followed, as many people will know, the course of the Missouri River, starting in St. Louis and continuing up to, they found the source of the Missouri at one point, went over the mountains to the Columbia River and onto the Pacific. But that was one narrow strip of this vast area that had then been passively mapped. John Charles Fremont's mission, he was an Army officer, his mission was to map more of the West, to map the Oregon Trail a few decades after Lewis and Clark, to map other areas, to also popularize and publicize the possibilities of moving West. He was doing this at the behest not of the presidents of the time directly, but of his father-in-law, the powerful senator, because Thomas Hart Benton had this idea that if Americans settled areas like Oregon, which was disputed territory, it would inevitably become part of the United States. Then the U.S. would have a Pacific coast. Then the United States could have direct trade routes to India and China. Benton foresaw the global world, the global economy in which we live today, where the passage between the United States and China is the world's most important global relationship, the most important economic relationship. Also, we found out the root of the coronavirus. This is the heart of global life today. And John C. Fremont, with the guidance of his father-in-law, was aggressively trying to open up that route and in many ways succeeded.
In 1856, when Fremont was a Republican nominee, Louisiana had 6 electoral votes. California had 4. Now, Fremont, I think, may have been the first major candidate for president from California.
Yeah, there couldn't have been anybody else because it hadn't been a state very many years. He was one of California's first two senators after it became a state in 1850. He was defeated for re-election but remained super famous and then got that nomination a few years later. And the admission of California as a free state, not a slave state, is a critical part of this story because the northern states, the free states, were growing in population, growing in number, growing in power, which meant they were growing in electoral votes. And it was in the 1850s that it became apparent that an anti-slavery candidate could run for president and maybe win with northern votes alone. Fremont failed, but Lincoln tried the same thing 4 years later and succeeded against divided opposition. It was that act of cutting slave states out of power that the South found so threatening and led them to threaten secession and ultimately civil war.
Now, Fremont became famous before the age of mass media, television, and radio, but he was a beneficiary of his celebrity. Are there any parallels between him and the current president?
Absolutely, in that he was a famous guy who had his name on everything. There are numerous towns and cities across America called Fremont. Some of them are relatively modern. Fremont, California, is only in the last few decades have been named that, but a bunch of them were named in his time. There were plants named after Fremont. There were two different mountain peaks named after John Charles Fremont. His name was on everything. He was that kind of celebrity, and he was very effective at using the media to publicize his exploits, even as he was committing those exploits. He wasn't somebody who was famous for being a president or a victorious general or somebody who had done things for many, many years and built up a great record of accomplishment. He was famous for traveling the American West at the very same time he was traveling the American West because he, with Jesse's help, publicized himself so well, which is a distinctive American innovation and something that we still live with today, that kind of simultaneity of committing the act and publicizing the act before you're even done with it.
The book is The Imperfect Union, How Jesse and John Fremont Mapped the West, Invented Celebrity, and Helped Cause the Civil War, from the incomparable Steve Inskeep. And Steve, before we leave, you've been with NPR, I think, since 1996. And
yep.
These times certainly are much different than any times before. How is this situation comparable to other crises that you've been a part of as a journalist?
Jim, I feel like this is every crisis I've covered rolled into one. It's a lot like 9/11, but it's also a lot like the global financial crisis and a lot like some other crises, and throw on top of that things that we've never experienced before. And we all know this. We're all experiencing this in our day-to-day lives. It's been an extraordinary challenge. It's been extraordinarily difficult for all of us, and I'm not saying I'm any different than anybody else in America, to just go through the day and to absorb this news and to try to make sense of it. But I want to say that I'm really proud of my colleagues at NPR. They have made extraordinary efforts to spread us out, to get us to broadcast from home. I've done the show a bunch of times from my basement, which is where I'm sitting talking to you right now. We are spread out in a way that can be safer. Even the people who still have to go into the headquarters are safer because there's very few of us on any given day who go into headquarters. People have made a lot of efforts to make us redundant and resilient and ready to continue covering this story. And my colleagues and I are determined to be there every day. And for NPR, in many ways, I feel like it's our finest hour.
Steve, thank you for your dedication and perseverance, and I hope we talk soon. Congratulations on your work.
Thanks for your dedication, and, yeah, I look forward to talking again.
Thank you, Steve Inskeep.